And why not? That doesn't work to move it.
Para mover, no sé, nunca he movido con eso. Pero este está más cerca. Y le dices chic, chic, chic.
Me queda como más cerca, ¿no?
No, se queda peor.
Sí. Okay. Okay. Let's see if it works. If not, we'll revert to your. Buenas tardes. Good afternoon. It's the end of a long day almost, so let's see if I can make this succinct and interesting for you so you stay awake. So I'm going to be speaking about community academic partnership that I have been involved with for the past 8 years. I will provide an overview of this particular community academic partnership. I will also describe the steps that we take in order to increase in-house capacity at the level of the community healthcare programs. We'll review findings of an assessment that is in progress right now of our activities for the past 8, 9 years. And then I want to also share with you challenges and lessons learned. I'm delighted to hear from the previous speakers that they are that you have evaluation as an integral part of your design. That is wonderful. So we have come a long way. So very briefly, as you know, the Latino population is growing very fast. Latest estimates of the Census Bureau is that we'll be 132 million, representing about 30% of the U.S. population by 2050. When we look at, I find these graphics very interesting because we have here, this is what we usually will see if you look at a population pyramid for the Latino population in the U.S. would be something like this. This is the population pyramid for the white population, non-Hispanic. And we don't have time right now to interact very much, so I'm going to walk you through it. If you look at the Latino, at the white non-Hispanic, okay, the white non-Hispanic population is the one on the right, upper right. That is a typical developed country pyramid where you have a growth of the upper part of the pyramid, a very small base, the less children, more older people. If this one is a little bit different, it's the same U.S. population, but when looking at the Latinos. But if we disaggregate the Latino population pyramid into foreign-born and native-born, then we see something very different. And what we see here, this is this down here represents the the foreign-born population. And what we see here is that they are the median age is in the middle, it's 35. So are the, you know, healthy young people who come and work and provide their services in this country. But if we look at the right, bottom right pyramid, this is the native born population. The median age is 17. And this looks exactly like a developing country pyramid, very small at the top, very large at the bottom. And what this means is that even if they only have one child per person, just by population momentum, we are going to see this incredible growth and explosion of the population. And that is where the growth is going to happen. It's going still continue to be here a little bit, but it's really going to happen in the native born. That is a very different situation than what it has been up until now. So then on the other hand, we have that situation. On the other hand, we know that there are incredible health disparities for the Latino population. For example, this is life, it's an adjusted, age-adjusted years of potential life lost before age 75 per 100,000 population. And we see that diabetes, chronic liver diseases are incredibly much higher, HIV, 168%, than the white non-Hispanic population. We also see that the Latinos of all races, because we are not just one race, have a very much higher adjusted incidence of cancers. It's 150% more for cervix and 63% higher for males, 150% higher for females of cancer of the stomach. And in addition, there are parts of the population that are have predispositions to, for example, diabetes. And these are directly related to overweight and obesity. So we do have an epidemic, and the problem is that now our children are also, it's like the entire U.S. population, but because they are native born, they have forgotten their traditional ways of eating and the exercise. So now we have this chronic disease encroaching on the health, additional to the health disparities. So now we have all these health disparities, and guess what? We don't have access to insurance. So in this graph, the top bar shows that over 50%, it's almost like 55% of the foreign-born non-citizens have no insurance. This is compared to non-Hispanic whites. The second bar from the top is the Hispanic foreign-born, but who are naturalized citizens, like me. Almost like 25% have no access to health insurance. But even the native-born, those, you know, kids there, is still over 20% have no access to health insurance. Incredible health disparity here, and compared to the white non-Hispanic, which is the bottom bar. Okay, so now I'm going to switch the presentation, and I'm going to talk about the community academic partnership. But it's a partnership that is not just community academic, but we also have a corporate partner who provides the funding for all this partnership to be able to take place. So we have three partners. One is the Johnson & Johnson Community Healthcare Program. We have the Community Healthcare Organizations, and we have the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And we work together in many different at many different levels. We work with the proposals when they come in as a request for proposals every year. We also provide a select students from our doctoral students that are interested and that apply to be part of this program. We interact at an annual meeting where there is a lot of information that is transferred. It's the beginning of the relationship with the community healthcare programs. And then we provide what we call technical assistance, but really is capacity building, which is a different connotation of technical assistance, through our doctoral students. So we have a doctoral student per project. There are 10 projects that are funded every year, so we have 10 doctoral students. It's a program that has grown very well at Hopkins. We started with five students, and now we have 20 doctoral students and 20 projects at any given time around the country. And the students come from 9 different departments at the School of Public Health plus the School of Nursing. So it's a very large program now. It's well represented. This is just a small portion of the projects that have been funded. There have been over 60 projects funded since I have been involved with this program, which is about 8 years. But of those, 17 have been serving the Latino population directly. So it's not that it's part of the program, but it's really the target population. And so we have had projects that deal with HIV prevention, prenatal care all over the country, also diabetes prevention and treatment, cardiovascular disease prevention, child obesity prevention. Those are usually in the schools. Women's health in general, like cervical cancer screening, mammographies. We had a very interesting project in Florida with the Florida farm workers, where they were reaching to women. They were not only Latinas, but they also had a lot of Haitian population. What's very interesting finding there is that the women in this population were very healthy. And I couldn't understand, because the statistics tell us, you know, obesity, diabetes, and they tested over 1,500 women, you know, blood glucose, blood pressure, weight, HIV test, rapid, yes. And there was very, very little prevalence. And when we really look at the situation, we realize, oh, but they are working in the fields. They are very poor, so they cannot go and eat the, you know, fast food. So they're still eating beans and greens, whatever they can find. So the chronic diseases are not there yet. So we also had some projects on dental health, projects on asthma prevention in this area in Los Angeles. And actually was, okay, 5 minutes. I better go fast, okay. Anyway, a variety of projects. These are some of our, not only the farm workers, women with babies, but also the community healthcare program representatives. Los Angeles and in Washington, D.C. All right, so what do you do to build capacity in this program? We develop an evaluation plan, and this is participatory in nature. We have a process which we call the O process, all the information on how to do this. If you have no access to direct technical assistance, it's in a book that is published by Springer. But we really start by doing the needs assessment, developing an evaluation plan, obtaining data, organizing, analyzing data, presenting the data, and then using that to monitor and to improve the provision of services, but also to obtain more funding. I think this I'm not going to cover in detail because of the time frame, but we really establish the scope of the evaluation. It's a little bit like what the previous speakers cover, I will be happy to talk more about these details afterwards with individuals or if you have questions. So we have the data entry, data analysis. So it's very step by step, but it is flexible. The process is flexible enough that it can be applied to any type of project in public health at the community healthcare organization. We use a conceptual framework, which is a key component of our program, and this is based on behavior change theories, and it has been tested extensively, always looking at the outcome, the relationship between the activities of the project and that final outcome. But we also include training and develop with the projects the psychosocial component, the knowledge, attitudes, perception, self-efficacy, which often is lacking in any community healthcare program. And then we also help them measure or think through how they're going to measure the behavior, adoption of the behaviors, which usually they do collect. Most community healthcare programs of this type are collecting biological measures. And always, we encourage them to collect socio-demographic data, because that is what is going to really explain to them if the program is not being very effective. There might be things in the background of these of their clients that are not allowing them to access the healthcare system. Now, talking about the other component, which is the scholars, the students, they provide technical assistance, but really is capacity building. They don't do the work for the projects. They teach them how to do their own monitoring and evaluation. It's a two-year program. They have 4 site visits, and between the visits, there is a constant daily, weekly emails and telephone calls. The students are trained and supervised, mentored at Hopkins. Any of the work that we do with the community healthcare program is mutually agreed. There are timelines and deadlines, which is very important, and has a strong training component. And we really emphasize the capacity building component and the participatory nature of the activities. So you probably are asking yourselves, oh, that's so great. You've done all that. What is the program effectiveness? I'm almost there. And we just started a telephone interview of past projects. We have been reviewing their final reports. We have found out that they have served enormous number of population, over 40,000. through the telephone interviews, we actually were able to follow, and we're still in the process of calling back, of the 17 Latino projects, we were able to talk with 9 of the organizations. They told us 30 of their staff had been trained, and of those 29, we're still in the program, working with them. Of those that we interviewed, some were program coordinators, some were program directors, and also some administrative staff. And the question that we asked were, okay, tell us what you remember that you learned. And so some of them told us we learned about writing goals and objectives, developing a concept or framework, how to create database, data analysis, you know, all these processes. And then we, if they told us, I remember this, then we would ask, have you used your training after that? And so that is the most interesting part, is that quite a few of them are still using their knowledge about developing goals and objectives, how to create a database. We use EpiInfo to teach them how to create databases. It's being improved on a regular basis, and it's free of charge, and the CDC is behind it. So, and it's very easy to teach. And data analysis, very interesting enough, quite a few of them were still using those skills. Where there's still emphasis that we need to really put into our training is for dissemination of findings. Apparently, they are not really using that. And when we asked them, well, have you transferred these skills to other components, other projects in your organization? 21% said yes, 11% said no for different reasons. And mainly, that they really had no other programs within the organization that they could do this, or that they were so busy, which is usually the problem. When we asked them, did the training contribute to your long-term sustainability? 12 out of the 17 said that yes, it had contributed. And when asking what were the most valuable lessons learned, well, you know, what I just said, developing goals, objectives, focusing the scope of data collection, designing a concept or framework. And when we asked, well, would you recommend this program to other community healthcare organizations, the majority said yes, without doubt we would. So challenges, time limitations, distance limitations, staffing limitations, and that is I can expand on that afterwards when you ask me all the details of those challenges. But lesson learned, we really needed to be flexible. The projects really need a basic infrastructure to be able to profit from this kind of participatory capacity building, and. We have already established a more close follow-up of by conference calls with the projects on a regular basis. They really like that and makes them move fast to finish what they are doing that is in their timeline. And we need to emphasize data presentation skills. That's it, and this is what we just covered. So thank you very much.
Borreo, and let's set you up.
Well, they're loading up. I want.